Good afternoon and welcome back to Naturalistic Support on this summer day that feels more like fall. I'm Arnel Doray, and joining me today is Elaine Durbach.
Hi, Arnel.
Hey, Elaine, and Sharon Stanley.
Hi, Arnel.
Hey, Elaine and Sharon, good to have you back with us. Naturalistic Support is a new approach to lasting personal growth and healthier, more satisfying relationships. We combine a progressive understanding of our human experience with peer support on this program, and by doing that, we help each other. And this happens when you call us to talk about yourselves, as well as to comment on each other's calls. Our number is 212-209-2877. And today, we continue our focus on parenting and education. From a naturalistic humanist perspective, children are naturally curious, creative, and inclined to share. But presently, the way our children are parented and taught is strongly influenced by a misanthropic view and a dominator model. We assume that children are naturally uncooperative and in need of continuous extrinsic motivation. But there is substantial evidence that contradicts such thinking. As was the case last week, today's program is strongly influenced by the work of American parenting and education critic, thought leader, and author Alfie Cohn. Alfie was a guest on our parent program, Equal Time for Free Thought, several times. During this hour, we'll play some more clips from Alfie's large body of lectures and interviews and take your calls as well to hear how these unconventional ideas sound to you. Last week, we listened to clips of Alfie discussing the difference between intrinsic and extrinsic motivation and the importance of promoting cooperation rather than competition. Here's a basic summary of the main ideas. Elaine?
Yeah, sure. When using extrinsic motivation, a parent or educator may utilize punishments, often euphemized as consequences, or rewards. Both are about controlling someone to achieve compliance rather than them acting from intrinsic motivation, acting to achieve a goal because they consider it to be interesting or enjoyable in and of itself. The more we reward or punish a child to perform, the less interest they will have in the task. Our key concern should not be if our children are motivated, but whether or not their motivation is intrinsic. In most families and schools, children are coerced into complying with our demands. But this manipulative approach fails to support the characteristics that parents say they value the most. Among the top character traits that parents say they want for their children are curiosity, creativity, empathy, and sociability. That rather than encouraging these traits, evidence suggests that rewards and punishments actually sabotage the very qualities we say we want. In sabotaging empathy, when a child who's sharing gets reinforced by rewards, they become less likely to share than a child who's not been rewarded. The reward shifts the emphasis away from the pleasure of sharing to the desire for compensation. And punishing a child who fails to share has a similar effect, increasing the child's focus on themselves as opposed to that pleasure of sharing. Rewards or punishments can coerce children into sharing, but it doesn't result in them becoming kinder and less self-involved. When it comes to sabotaging sociability, competitive grading disrupts social dynamics, creating a stratified learning environment where students understand that they have a stake in their classmates doing academically worse. It's a system that creates adversaries. Sorry.
Adversaries.
Rather than friendships. Adversaries are created in sports as well as academics, with many aspects of extracurricular life presented as contests, including talent shows and choral events and science fairs. They're sabotaging curiosity and creativity this way. Teaching to the test makes test grades seem more important than curiosity and creative thinking. Instead of children feeling free to invest their time and energy where their curiosity leads them, they learn that what is most important is getting the highest score. In some cases, the reward that a parent withholds might be their love and affection. Not only is this a poor way to motivate, it also has tragic impact.
Sharon?
A pro-anthropic view of children recognizes that children are naturally curious, social, and inclined to share. However, these natural inclinations are highly contingent on numerous factors. For example, consider the claim that children are naturally inclined to share. Research suggests that this is correct. However, the degree of sharing depends on the age of the child, the portion involved, and if a request to share has been made. Such nuances notwithstanding, generally children are inclined to share without threat of punishment or lure of reward. Children's natural curiosity is also overlooked by a majority of our educational institutions. Grades, high-stakes exams, test prep, and routine homework assignments following an intense workday in school are all reflections of our attitudes about children's lack of natural desire to learn, grow, and gain proficiency. We fear that if given massive amounts of free time, children will be idle or involved in an activity that could be harmful to themselves or others. But this is a highly cynical view. Are you a parent or an educator or otherwise involved in the life of a child? Do any of these ideas resonate for you? Or maybe you disagree. Either way, we'd love to hear from you. Call us at 212-209-2877. Alfie also discusses what psychologist Angela Duckworth calls grit and psychologist Carol Dweck calls a growth mindset, and what is problematic about these two very popular ideas in education.
And we have a clip of Alfie talking about just that. Here goes.
I wrote a piece which is on my website. Like all my articles, it's there for free, which is called The Mindset. You know, and there's another one on grit in particular. I forget the exact wording of the title. Angela Duckworth is a deeply conservative person who is more about getting persistence at whatever tasks people are given to do than asking whether the tasks make sense and who decided. I'm more the latter, where I'm asking the Latin question, cui bono, who does this benefit? Who benefits when you're told you got to stick with one musical instrument and keep at it for years, whether it gives you joy or not, rather than sampling many kinds of music? Because she says explicitly, that's what her value set, that's what's a good thing to do. Grit is just a sort of reworking of very old notions found in Aesop's Fables and Benjamin Franklin's Almanac, you know, and Christian denunciations of sloth about persistence and so on. People don't need to have grit when they're doing something they love. And so, you know, when you present a child with a worksheet to do in school, for example, the Angela Duckworths and the Carol Dweck's, who talk about growth mindset and so on, would like kids to say, by golly, if I give this my all and keep at it and show a lot of effort, I'll bet I could succeed. Whereas I think the appropriate question to ask is, why does anybody have to do this garbage? And how come I had no say in the matter? The more you're focused on things like grit, self-regulation, persistence, a growth mindset, which is mindset means it's about the kid's attitude, the more you're blaming the people who are victims of the system, and the less likely you are to ask the hard questions about who came up with the task and whether we want to go beyond compliance, both at home and at school.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. What do you guys think?
I've got mixed feelings about it.
Okay. I know, Elaine, you have liked the work of Carol Dweck, right?
Yeah, I found it very interesting. I'm very curious to hear what he has to say about it. What worries me is that what do you do about the information that doesn't naturally attract a child? I mean, if I'd been left to myself, I would have been drawing and painting and jumping up and down. I would never have learned to multiply or divide. I wouldn't have learned any science.
But it sounds like you would have been sounds like you would have been quite the artist and physically in great shape.
Yeah, that maybe. Yeah. I'd have been an artistic athlete.
You know, go ahead, Sharon.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, you know, this as a special ed teacher, we would take that kind of talent and try to use that to help you learn other subjects. And hopefully that would create some joy for you.
Yeah, I can see that. If you generate the motivation, not with reward and punishment, but if you engage interest and passion, maybe there's a way to lead. But I don't believe you can teach without leading children in the directions that they haven't necessarily got a desire to go.
Yeah, I think it takes a talented educator to inspire kids to be curious and want to learn things that they haven't thought about before, that they haven't considered, that they didn't even know existed. But I think what Alfie is saying is stuff that's pounded into you isn't retained, and the stuff that's pounded in so hard that it's retained winds up. The pounding process winds up doing irreparable damage. So,
yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
So it's a trade-off. And I think that another thing Alfie would say is we don't have to theorize what this might look like. There are actually schools that practice this. They're not part of the public education system, but there's like the Albany Free School is one. It's been doing it for a long time. There's another one in New England. I forget the name of it. I think it's Sudbury.
The Waldorf schools.
Yeah, I was thinking of the Waldorf school. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it Fielding? Sharon?
Fieldston. The Fieldston school.
Yeah, that's ethical culture school, right?
Yeah. They definitely follow that model.
Yeah, so I mean, the idea is that, you know, as a kid progresses, they're going to want to know how to read. And if what they're interested in requires some math knowledge, as they encounter that need for that, they're going to want to get the math knowledge. If, you know, as a kid pursues their interest, they're naturally going to encounter the need to build these other skills.
Yeah, absolutely. Now that totally makes sense.
Yeah. Sharon, why don't you continue?
Okay. Are you now, or have you been a parent of a school-aged child? What was your experience with homework? I was a teacher for over 30 years, and one of the parents in my class told me homework was the very, very worst part of her day, every day.
Right. Actually, I think we jumped a little bit because we were going to, like, also ask, are there children in your life for whom the educational system as a whole isn't working? And what about your experience, listeners, as a child? What was your experience being a student in our public or private educational system? And today, are there children in your family, like nieces or nephews, or even children in your community who seem to be struggling to meet educational or parental expectations. Our number is 212-209-2877, and call us and tell us about your experience, either yourself as having been a student or knowing a child that's having a hard time, or maybe you know a child who's flourishing, and we want to hear about it. As you were going into, Sharon, Alfie has a unique take on homework. And it's sad that it's so unique because it's based on research. And it shouldn't be that unique, but old ideas die hard. So here's a clip of Alfie talking about homework.
No research has ever found any benefit to homework of any kind for kids who are not in high school yet. Even in high school, the more research that comes in, the less reason there is to believe that we need to make children work what amounts to a second shift after having spent all day in school. No research has ever found the benefit. No 12-year-old should be forced to do a school assignment at home, let alone a 6-year-old, which is beyond the pale. If we're continuing to assign it, it must be because we think they ought to have to do more assignments, not because any data suggests that it's useful. And yet, the question is almost always framed just in terms of how much, with parents saying, "She's in tears. It's been a couple of hours, and she's only 10. And the idea of a bold challenge to the status quo is to have a little less homework, to cap the number of minutes. The more you argue over how much homework, the less likely you are to step back and ask, why do we need to make kids do more schoolwork at home? And why do teachers get to decide what happens during family time in the first place?
Well, teachers don't decide, as I said to you earlier, right, Arnell?
Yeah, you were saying how in New York State, where you were a public school teacher,
correct,
you wound up having your time, your homework time requirements mandated.
Exactly, and it was as much as 15 minutes for a kindergartner, 20 minutes for a first grader, maybe by third grade up to a half an hour.
That's obscene. So,
it is obscene. And the fact is that whether I agree or disagree, it doesn't matter. They expected me to do that. And I myself would be rated or graded on whether I was doing that.
Listeners, are you a parent of a school-aged child? Or tell us what your experience was with homework. Can you recall when you were in school? Did you have the benefit of teachers who aroused your curiosity and inspired you to want to learn more? Or did you have teachers whose primary concern seemed to be keeping control of the classroom and just grinding through lessons? We have a caller on the line, so let's take that. Let's see, we have to do this, and this is WBAI, you are on the air. Who's calling? Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Brooklyn.
Okay.
Who is this?
Your name?
It's Mitch. I'm calling from Brooklyn.
Yeah. Hey. Go ahead, Mitch.
I'm calling about the medications that they're putting these children on. They say they are ADHD, and they're putting on these medications. And these medicines have long-range effects on these children. You
yeah.
think that there should be a better way of getting to these children without putting them on medication?
Yeah.
Which it could affect for the rest of their life if they don't really take it, if they don't really do anything about it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I want to share one personal story with you, Mitch, which is one of my daughters definitely was struggling with ADD issues, and her mother and I both hesitated for a long, long time. All throughout elementary school, we hesitated to succumb to the teacher's requests that she go on medication. And we waited and waited and waited, and finally, in high school, maybe in 10th grade, we said, okay, let's give it a try. And oh my goodness, it was night and day. She went from just barely hanging on by the skin of her teeth to excelling and ultimately graduating cum laude from Temple University. And what a difference it made. So I could just have that one anecdote. Now, clearly, my experience and my daughter's experience, the experience in my family, isn't necessarily common, but it does seem like we can't just, you know, every situation has to be judged individually, and we can't, you know, it might have been damaging to my daughter's self-esteem and to her overall progress that we didn't take the teacher's advice sooner. Elaine, Sharon, do you have any thoughts on this?
I think it's a great point that you're making, and I share this caller's concern. I had the same feeling when my son was in school, and I've seen some children absolutely thrive. They just bloom, as you say, and clearly there was something metabolically out of sync, and the medication filled in that little piece in the jigsaw puzzle. But there were other kids who got doped by it, who couldn't function without the meds, and it changed them, their emotional makeup. It just felt like totally the wrong thing that happened to them.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a mixed, it can be a mixed bag, and it has to be looked at really individually. And the danger is when, you know, we just say this whole group of people we're going to treat the same way. That
Looks so magical, like you say, with in the right place, it is the solution, but not for everybody. And I think doctors decided it was teachers decided it, that here was a wonderful solution, and you know, everybody should benefit, and it doesn't work that way.
Yeah. Sharon, did you have any experience with your students on medications?
I did. And I was a special ed teacher, so a lot of them did have the ADHD diagnosis. The other thing I need to bring up, as a special ed teacher, really 90% of the kids are boys.
Yeah.
And 90% of those kids are usually, you know, Latino.
Yeah.
So I don't think we are taking care of our boys educationally the way they need to be taken care of.
Yeah.
Now, back to the medication thing, the problem with medication is there's a very unscientific way of trying to figure it out. If they started a first grader or a second grader on a medication, they would send him with a check, him or her, but mostly him, with a checklist. Then the teacher would have to fill out the checklist every day to see if there were improvements in their behavior. And it was through that checklist or through the report from a parent or the teacher where they would decide to raise the dosage little by little by little.
Right. Did it ever go in the opposite direction where people said, okay, this isn't working, let's either curtail the medication or change it, swap it out for a different one?
Yes, I do think that happened. And one of the other concerns, really, when it comes to the medication, at least that my students were on, sometimes it made them not eat, and they weren't hungry. And when little kids, we always worry about them eating, at least I did. And so anything that's going to make a child eat even less would be very scary for a parent.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Used to have kids come by our house on their way to school. And it depended on whether they're taking their meds or not taking the meds. They would come upstairs and want breakfast. My husband was a great cook. And there were kids who came and had breakfast with us and kids who couldn't face food because they'd had or hadn't had their meds.
Yeah, yeah. It could really affect appetite. We have another call on the line. Let's take that call. This is WBAI. You are on the air. Who's calling? Where are you calling from?
Crystal calling.
Hey, Crystal. How are you?
pretty good. This comment is not about medicine, but it's about so-called taking religion out of school.
Yeah.
First of all, I went to public school in the late 60s, or middle 60s. The only people I knew that had anything to do with religion were the Catholic kids. The Catholic kids at 2:15 would go to religious instruction.
To catechism, yeah.
I was in to
catechism.
Right, and the only reason why I'm bringing this point out is because you got all these people talking about, oh, when they took religion out of school, everything went downhill. I don't know what schools they're talking about, but I know in public school, which is the school I went to, we didn't have religion. We didn't pray first. We did Pledge of Allegiance, but we didn't have no prayers going on. There was no Bibles there. So I'm only bringing that out because that's a very vital thing. You know, some religious people have this delusion that there was maybe in some other public school that wasn't where I went, but there was no religion in school. Those Catholic kids went to religious instruction.
Well, Crystal, partially that's because of the time you went to school. I think you said late 60s. The major battles against school prayer was actually just before that. So had you gone in the late 50s and the early 60s, you could have been subjected to school prayer.
If I may finish my point.
Go right ahead.
That's fine, too. But I've been, let me see, 67, 68, 69, somewhere around in there. Because I remember I went to junior high school in 72, I think it was. Okay.
Yeah.
There was no religious instruction in public school in Harlem that I went to.
Right.
So you have people running around. This is the only point I get to make on your show today. You got these folks coming over and they took religion out of school and that's what made the schools go downhill. There was no religious nothing in the public school I went to.
Right.
And truth be told, it wasn't needed. Because the children, we knew our place. The teachers knew their place. Everybody knew their lane. And I don't mean that in a negative or derogatory way. I'm just saying that children did children things. We played, we had snacks, whatever the circumstances was, and there was no religion.
Yeah. Okay, Crystal, thank you so much for your call. Call again, and we've got to go on to the next. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. And this is WBAI. You are on the air. Who's calling? Where are you calling from?
Hello, this is Bob in Long Island.
Okay, Bob, if you could talk a little closer and a little louder, we could hear you.
I'm pretty close, actually.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah, go on, Bob.
And I know the theme for this topic for this show is basically pedagogy. Effectiveness of different training, different teaching techniques or modalities or paradigms. And I know the question was, did I ever retain, you know, information from what I learned in school? I think was something. Is that what you were asking?
Yeah, I mean, did it work for you? I mean, what was your experience?
It was difficult because I had a lot of anxiety and social problems, so that was kind of distracting from what was actually being taught. But just in just a quick kind of scan back, I remember more from elementary school and junior high than I'd ever been from high school. High school was basically like a coda. It was just like an embellishment, personally speaking. I just wanted to ask another question that's slightly on topic but also off topic when it comes to ADHD.
Yeah.
The question is, and I guess many studies have been done, or hopefully so, more scientifically based than pure psychiatric speculation, whether kids who are supposedly have, you know, what's called ADHD, do these symptoms or do they present when the kid is actually involved in something that interests them, when they're watching a movie that engages them, when they're involved in an activity that they voluntarily concentrate on because it's not mandated to them?
Yeah, I'll let Sharon respond to that, but I just want to say my hunch is this right, Sharon? That the problem is that kids that really suffer with ADHD, they can't get into something that engages them because when they try, they wind up having difficulty.
Well, yes, I guess that's true. Sure, there's different degrees of that, but I have had students where, you know, they were very athletic. And they didn't, you know, well, if they were on the medication for school. But, of course, if they were going to an after-school program, the medication might still be in their system.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right, but if they were involved in the athletic activity without the medication, would they be able to engage with a certain pleasurable, you know, intention?
I think if they were very athletic and sports-minded, I do believe that, yes, they wouldn't need the medication necessarily.
But, yeah, but that's, you know, that's already, like, utilizing physical movement, which, you know, that's not, you know, the problem of an ADHD kid isn't that they can't physically move. It's that they almost can't stop wanting to physically move.
Good point. Perfect point.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, yeah. Bob, thank you. We've got another caller we got to get to. Go ahead, Bob. Okay. I think we've moved on. This is WBAI. You are on the air. Who's calling? Where are you calling from?
Hey, it's Russ from White Plains, Darnell.
Yeah, hey, Russ.
Hey, Sharon. And Elaine, I admire the fact that you would disagree with those around you. I think that's the most important thing to learn in school. And what I want to ask, not all children are the same. So some children require a more strict approach. You get good teachers and bad teachers. It teaches you how to deal with life and people you encounter. The question I want to ask you, Arnell, or Sharon, and Elaine, is AI can provide feel-good teachers, which is what you seem to want. Do you think AI is going to be good if it provides children what they need? And the second question, real quick, is what about social promotion? Do you think children should be promoted even if they aren't able to function competently? Because it affects different demographic groups differently. Thank you very much. It's fine.
Well, I don't think they should be graduated if they don't hit the marks. But they do. They get graduated mostly anyway because the schools are rated on how many children are held over.
Yeah. You know, the entire structure of graduation is something that is questioned by alternative-minded educators like Alfie Cohn. Just the idea of having these bridge classes, you know, where you mix the first and second graders or the third and the fourth graders, or have considerably older kids by like a couple of levels, tutoring and working with very young kids. A lot of kids are going to be willing to learn something that they wouldn't have been willing to learn for themselves, but if you tell them, you're going to be teaching this to this five-year-old, they'll learn it in order to be able to teach it.
And I think children respond to other children also.
Yeah.
It reminds me of the one-room schoolhouse, which had some major disadvantages, but there were some wonderful things that multiple age learning situation.
Yeah, we actually have a clip that we'll hopefully get in before the end of the show where Alfie is talking about a first and second grade bridge class where you have both mixed ages in there and some wonderful things that could go on in a classroom like that. But first we have another caller. This is WBAI. You're on the air. Who's calling? Where are you calling from? Hello?
Hi, yes, hi. Janice.
Yeah.
On the subject of homework, I feel mixed. As an educator, I do follow the progressive methods, and I had my children in so-called alternative schools. But I think that no child should be stressed about homework. And if they have special needs, I think their parents have to be taken into the conversation and how they can help without stress, overstressing the parents where to get help. But I think it's like having a quiz. I'd much rather have a quiz every week because that kind of forced me to study than a test that was cumulative and had so much in it. I think homework helps you study if it's relevant. You know, it should be fun. Of course, at lower grades, there's so many ways to do it. But I found that I never had to study when I was young. I breezed through everything. But then things started to get hard in high school, and I didn't know how to study because I was never held account. I didn't, you know, I didn't need to. So I think there's some benefit, even putting time aside in the classroom to do some studying or going over something.
Yeah, Janice, the idea that an alternative approach to education like Alfie Cohn endorses is that, you know, by the time you're in high school, what is driving your educational life is your passion, something that you're passionate about.
Intrinsic value.
Yeah, and if you're passionate about it, as you encounter each obstacle to your knowing what you want to know, you will be motivated to take those on. And it won't be, you know, like learning how to study, you know, yes, it could be good if you can turn to a qualified adult to say, here's what I'm trying to figure out or what I want to know, you know, point me in the right direction, you know, suggest materials to me or resources that will help me with this. That's you know, a good role for a teacher. But, you know, if you're passionate, you will figure out how to study. You will figure out what you need to do to gain that knowledge that you're passionate about gaining.
Sometimes it comes too late, because I found with my kids, once they left that system of the alternative school, they were unable or not as able to keep up with the required work. Maybe that's because the whole system hadn't changed, you know, throughout. But a lot more was able to be done by those who have learned to persevere or was given harder work at one point.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's pros and cons.
Yep, absolutely. Janice, thank you so much for your call. Call us again.
Thank you.
Okay.
Oh, I saw that same pattern on it. I hated homework, and I hated doing homework with my kid. But I did see what Janice is referring to, the kids who had who'd learned to study, who had some kind of academic backbone. They melted through stuff that took us forever.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, I think, you know, the question isn't comparing kids that have been conventionally taught to kids that have had a lot more liberal or flexible or progressive approach. It's really kids that are being taught traditionally versus kids that are passionate and alive in their, you know, wanting to know the information they need to know to excel at what they care about.
Yeah, yeah.
We have another caller on hold, I think. This is WBAI. You are on the air. Who's calling? Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Brooklyn. I called earlier. I called about children with the...
Yeah, Mitch.
On the medications. They haven't did any studies on the long-range effects on these medications. One long-range effect is psychosis. This medication gets in your system, it stays there. It's there, and it's waiting to be activated. I know when I was coming up, there was no such thing as putting no children on no medications. Is this a new thing? Is this something that has been just developed? I'm, you know, nobody took any medications, and everybody came out fine. The day they're putting these kids on medications, and you don't know what it's going to break out on in their life.
Yeah, I wouldn't assume that everybody came out fine. I mean, people are educated for the first two decades of their life, and how much of that schooling do they retain? How much, you know, has really made a difference in their lives? I mean, you know, I hear what you're saying about, you know, generations that didn't have those medications to rely on. But, you know, all I can say is, and Sharon, Elaine, you could comment on this too. All I can say is that, you know, we all know dozens of people who are on those kind of medications, and they're not psychotic. I mean, you know, to conclude that to be on those medications is to have a high likelihood of becoming psychotic, just, you know, is it's something I would expect from RFK.
Well, I was going to say, if there's been no studies on the long-term effects, how do you know psychosis is one of them?
Yeah. I think he was saying that there are studies on long-term effects indicating that. But, you know, if you look up, you know, the problems with, you know, ADD medications on the internet, you will come up with, you know, everything. You know, I'm sure there are websites that show you the link between that and COVID. You know, I mean, it's just when you have a confirmation bias, you will be able to get your bias confirmed.
Yeah, absolutely. I keep thinking of my son. I hope he'd forgive me saying this on the air. But this was a kid who was totally resistant to homework, totally resistant to being forced into anything. You could not make him do what he didn't want to do. When he came to movement with vehicles, with wheels, his motivation would kick in. Exactly what, you know, Alfie Cohn was saying. This guy got into skateboarding as a teenager. He wasn't very physical as a kid. He didn't like losing his balance. But once he learned the physics of skateboarding, he could teach anybody to skate. And then he got into this drift racing that he does now. Total motivation. Hours and hours and hours of work.
Yeah.
And he understands the physics behind it and the chemistry behind it.
Yep, and probably also like the mechanics of the car and, you know,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Things that he had his passion not been aroused, he would have never been able to put that concentration in.
Exactly, and almost nothing in school matched that.
Yeah, and so school failed him. He didn't fail.
Yeah.
You know, they would tell him that he failed school, but really it's the other way around. School failed him. I think we might have one more caller on the phone. This is WBAI. You are on the air. Who's calling? Where are you calling from?
Hello. How you doing?
Yeah. Who's calling?
It's Ed from Jamaica, Queens. How's it
hey,
going?
Hey, Ed. Good to hear from you again.
It's good to hear from you, too. I want to say it this time, I totally agree with you as far as education.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole system needs to be changed. I was one of those, like the people you were talking about, I abhorred homework.
Yeah.
And I really abhorred studies.
Yeah, yeah.
But I got a mechanical, I think I got it from my father, a mechanical inclination. Anything that dealt with machinery, cars, boilers, you know, even electronics, I picked it up.
Yeah.
And, I believe because half of the stuff I learned in the traditional education, I don't even remember.
Yep.
I mean, you know, the isosceles triangle and physics, I don't remember it because it served no purpose. But when I had one good teacher when I was in high school, and he really helped me out. His name was Mr. Kosovar. And he was the shop teacher. And once he saw that you had a propensity for something, he let you go. You know, as long as you ain't
nice.
Hurt yourself, he let you go.
Nice.
And that's how I learned. I found out on my own. I found the books. I could see things and put it together. And I believe education isn't so much enlightening you as it is training you. Training you to remember this, route memorization, dates and facts and all that. You got to let people be who they're going to be.
And that memorization doesn't last, Ed. People memorize stuff for the test, and as soon as the test is over, if they were tested like 6 months later, it's gone. As if it were never in there.
Useless information. You're not going to refresh it with any more in your life.
Yeah, exactly.
You need to let people. I'd like to see like a free form type of educational system where there's some basic things I believe you need to learn, reading, writing, arithmetic. And I think you can do that in the first maybe about 7-8 years of your life. But once that's over, you should be allowed to explore and find out who and what you are and really what what tickles your fancy, for want of a better word.
Yeah.
If we allow that, I think people would be a lot better off.
Ed, thank you. And you know what we always say? If Ed agrees with us, we must be doing something right. Thank you, Ed. And we have another call. This is WBAI. You are on the air. Who's calling? Where are you calling from?
I know.
Yeah.
Are you saying that because children are not excited about maybe their dreams or subjects, that something's wrong with them? Is that because you said that when children are exuberant about the things they enjoy about school and learning, they tend to thrive? So the child that, because sometimes you have teachers that they know which kids are getting it, like in math class and stuff, so those kids sit in the front and don't have to hear. But are you saying that if a child, like I used to like to write stories, and I had a book that I wrote the stories, but it didn't go anywhere. But
yeah.
I'm still a writer and I'm still a thinker. But I just want you to answer that question. Were you saying that because children don't show exuberance to subjects and things that they may enjoy, does that mean that they are damaged? Is there something wrong with them? Is that what you were saying?
No. I was saying something's wrong with the institution that's failing to arouse their passion. Something is wrong with the limited options that they are given. It's really our responsibility as parents and as educators and as the community raising the next generation. It's up to us to inflame them with passion about something.
That's the way it sounds like that's what you were saying.
Yeah.
Every kid is exuberant, he's enthusiastic about certain subjects and stuff that he enjoys. He'll automatically adapt and move forward. That's the way it sounds.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You got it. Elaine, Sharon?
They are exuberant about it, but they're not getting it. It's too hard. There's a glitch. Whatever the circumstance is and stuff like that.
Well, I don't think it's the goal of the school. I don't even think that's on the menu. I don't think that arousing the kids' passion, you know, that's something that if you get like some errant teacher that's going off the reservation, you know, venturing into the unknown extracurricular territory, you might get somebody who's thinking about arousing the kids' passion. But, you know, for the most part, that's not the administrative code. That's, you know, as Sharon was saying.
That's not what I was saying. You said the child. If the child seems very excited about a topic or something, a dream he may have and so forth, he will achieve that, is what you said.
Yeah.
I'm saying, what if a child, are you saying that a child is damaged that doesn't exude that type of behavior?
No, he's not saying that. He's saying that it's actually a normal behavior if you're engaging in something that is not interesting to you.
I'm not beefing. I'm just saying that that's what it sounds like you said. Maybe I'm wrong. I mean, I could be wrong, too. But that's what it sounds
like. When kids are bored, they get up to mischief. We need our kids to not be bored.
Yeah, I'm just saying that it's up to us to engage kids. If kids are not engaged, that doesn't mean they're damaged. That doesn't mean they can't get excited by something. But I do think, you know, years of telling them that it's their fault that they're not learning, it's their fault that they're failing, that can have emotional impact. We can damage kids, but we don't. But most kids, you know, they come out, they come out of it somehow and they become adults and they function. But think about how much better they would be and how much fuller they'd be able to participate in our community and how much they'd be able to contribute if we did things differently. And that's what this program has been about. And I think that might about be all we could fit in terms of callers. Sharon and Lane, it's been a show.
It sure has. We've got so much more on this topic.
Yeah.
And everybody's had experience with school, one way or another.
Yeah.
Everyone.
Yeah, and there's so many areas for us to go into, like how do you arouse a kid's passion? And, you know, medication seems to be very, very controversial, but it seems like an important topic to take on, and we should take that on sometime.
I'd love to hear more, too, from Sharon, and we've laid a lot on teachers.
Yeah.
How does a teacher cope with a classroom full of varied children all at different levels?
Yeah, absolutely. Sharon, did you have anything you wanted to leave us with?
I do know that there are ways to teach children things and make it interesting for them. And in the case of, for example, I was working with a first grade regular class, and they were having difficulty understanding even numbers. And I think, you know, the regular ed teacher was having a tough day and she was exhausted, and we finally, you know, and I said to her, can I try something? And I started, you know, lining them up two by two. So this, they were physically standing in pairs.
So you found another way to do it that engaged them, and that's great.
And it was involving getting up and getting away from the desk.
Yep. All right, we have to close up. Thank you, guys. You've been listening to Naturalistic Support's look at parenting and education. I'm Arnell Duray, and today we were joined by Elaine Durbach and Sharon Stanley. Thanks, Elaine and Sharon.
Oh, thank you, Arnell, and thanks to our listeners. That was fun.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Today's program was largely based on the work of Alfie Cohn, whose articles, books, and other media presentations we can find at his website at alfiecohn.org. That's alfiekohn.org. Alfie also has a great new podcast called Cohn Zone. Thanks to our talented engineer, Red Johnson, and today we had a different engineer. We had Will from Afrobeat, and Tahila Weiss for her support. Tune in again next Wednesday at 2 p.m. for another edition of Naturalistic Support. Archived editions of our program can be found on our website at wbai.org and at equaltimeforfreethought.org. Hi to my foster mom, Marilyn. Stay where you are, because coming right up is the Katie Halper Show. And always try to be kind, because you never really know what someone else is going through.
Swing in school, la 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 la, where the chicks are kicks and the cats